Angels and Dragonflies. Time is for dragonflies and angels. The former live too little, and the latter live too long. James Thurber. Nothing brings out the true family spirit like dividing up the spoils of your dead parents. While emptying the house after mine died, my sisters and I uncovered a ceramic lamp with a dragonfly and lily pad motif in leaded stained glass. It was one of a premier line of what were called mushroom lamps a la Tiffany that my grandfather's pottery produced between 1911 and 1918. And although it was stashed in a carton under a workbench in the basement for over 40 years, it was in perfect condition. What? Why did this lamp never see the light of day at our house? I decided it was probably the style, which was odd and a bit bohemian, and did not go with our Bucks County converted barn with colonial Williamsburg aspirations decor. My father knew that nobody but him went into his workshop, really, other than to stare helplessly at the fuse box or grab a hammer and a couple of nails to hang up a Beatles poster. Our basement was segregated. To the left was the laundry, the domain of women, smelling of starch and Fell's naphtha, the brown soap we'd scour ourselves with after exposure to poison ivy. To the right, the domain of the only man in the house, full of table saws, clamps, and drills, and other mysterious gizmos and gadgets. Plus, there was the added terror of sharp blades dangling in front of giant spiders, and always the possibility of a mouse dead in a trap, eyes bulging towards a moldy piece of cheddar. My father had been so cavalier about the other pottery, which held flowers or paintbrushes, or were used as bookends, doorstops, ice buckets, and stepping stools. But he must have known, although not to his taste, the lamp was exceptional and fragile. You don't grow up around pottery and not know how easily it can end up in pieces. He and his sister had played among the shards, sliding down the packing chute, my aunt scared out of her wits by the piles of disembodied porcelain dolls' heads with their spooky, staring eyes. So he hid the dragonfly lamp away, beyond our reach and curiosity. After he died and we started dividing up everything between the four of us, most of it was decided by drawing lots out of a hat. A slip of paper reading, "You win, you bitch," increased your holdings. I got most of my fulper by 1, 2, 3 come along, a variation of rock, paper, scissors, where I managed to psych out Rada, sometimes my only competitor for certain pieces, divining which set of fingers she might switchblade out from behind her back into the bedding area. I usually lost the hat draw, though. The dragonfly lamp was not put into this mix. It was clearly too important for its fate to be decided by the luck of the draw. We'd only recently donated one big vase to a museum, and now Rada, heady with the thrill of philanthropy, contacted the curator of decorative arts at the Newark Museum, tantalizing him with the possibility of a Fulper lamp donation. She soon got back to him. "Oops, sorry, one of us is white-knuckling the dragonfly lamp. How'd you like the golf ball vase instead?" They were my white knuckles. "If we are going to start a tile business based on the pottery, we should have a private collection that is significant," I reasoned, primly. But really, I just wanted to own it. I wanted it to be mine, all mine. It is so unusual, and when lit up with a very low-watt bulb so as not to mess with the thermodynamics of glass and pottery, the dragonflies glow. Dragonflies. The denizens of the canal that I had explored all my youth by rowboat or by walking along its towpath, talking to myself or singing the theme song of whatever TV show I'd been watching. "Here's Kathy who's lived most everywhere, from Zanzibar to Berkeley Square, but Patty's on fish, I'd probably been a canal barge mule in another life, but the kind that wears a cute straw hat and comments Mr. Ed style to the camera. I admit, though, I wanted this lamp because it was prestigious. And here is my own little Shakespearean tragic flaw. It would be an enormous point of pridefulness that I, the youngest, for whom equal means a little bit less, would now have a rare, priceless piece of history, my history. But as I was reaching beyond my station, Lady Macbeth egging me on, I suddenly find myself to be co-owner of the dragonfly lamp, diminished to a quarter of the woman I was inflating myself to be. "Annie, I think we all want to own it now," says Big Sister Agnes after I made my bid to kibosh the donation and go after private ownership, mine specifically. "Okay, that's fine," I concede nobly, loving the sound of my own voice as I add, "as long as it stays in the family." The lamp is now owned by the Metropolitan Museum of Art. How did this come about, you may wonder? Why did she capitulate? It was while euthanizing our own business, Fulper Tile, at the end of the 20th century, that our corporate president, Rada, made the argument for selling the lamp, which included A. The question of who would actually be in charge of the thing now that it's owned by all four of us. "Well, yeah," I blurt out silently in my head. "And why is that, huh?" Hackles rising. B. The recent record sale price of a similar lamp at auction. Sigh. You see? Priceless. Barely keeping the chip off my shoulder while ripping up the mental picture of me, Barbara Streisand, Richard Gere, and the blonde from 30-something, chatting about our rare Fulper collections over coffee. And C. Fragility. Chippable, crackable, smashable to bitsable, this was the last straw hat that broke the barge mule's head. It's just clay and glass after all, and life is clumsy. Did I really want to be responsible for keeping it intact? I, whom my mother had entrusted with the spinning wheel her grandfather as a boy had carried on his back across Ireland to the ship that would bring them to America, and which now lies in cherished pieces after it deteriorated in a storage facility, waiting for me to finally get a legitimate place to live. For all my self-righteous sentimentality, I am not that careful with my things. So, as the sun set on the Clinton 1 years and the new millennium dawned, sensibility took over, resentfulness receded, and we sold the lamp. I comfort myself with the knowledge that it is now being cared for by highly skilled professionals, and if they screw up, and I've known a few art handlers in my day, the museum has the resources to repair and restore. Do I have any regrets? Only that when I agreed to co-ownership, what I should have said was this. In the event of any future museum donation or sale over my dead body, the museum must provide a plaque that reads, "Really, from the collection of Anne W. Fulper, granddaughter of the grandfather of Anne W. Fulper, CEO of AnneW.Fulper.net.com, a subsidiary of Fulper Glazes Incorporated, Anne W. Fulper, vice president," who really should have been president. This is not a good side of me. I'm not supposed to want family recognition on the scale I wish I deserved. Or am I? Yes, I'm grateful the lamp is safe inside a museum. But I like imagining its other life, sitting on an antique silk piano scarf draped over a baby grand while you're having drinks with family and friends, and then you gather round to sing because we're in a Cole Porter musical after all. Ice is tinkling in cocktails as darkness falls, and we break into Miss Otis Regrets in three-part harmony. Then someone's perfectly manicured fingers, Rada's probably, she had such beautiful hands, reach over to flick the elegant switch, and the shade lights up with pure stained glass church color. Everyone oohs and ahs, but what is illuminated is not the Stations of the Cross or some bleeding holy nail in the heart saint, but dragonflies. Dragonflies. They're older than God, yet the lifespan of an adult is 6 months at best. So, as a result, they're not too picky about what they eat, often cannibalizing the larva of their own young. I think about the three of them stylized on our lampshade. The image is far from scientific, broken into the most basic design elements, like a child's drawing. A head, a segmented body, and two sets of wings. If you look closely, you can see an attempt has been made to etch delicate veins into the stained glass. In real dragonflies, this intricate webbing allows them to fly at impossible speeds, up and down and sideways and backwards and towards you in any direction and then suddenly stop, which they never do for long. "Oh," they say in their tiny helium voices, "must go over there, wolf down those mosquitoes." Then, still hungry, they think, Junior's larva looks good. Their life is so busy and brief. How fitting that they are finally stopped and immortalized in stained glass, framed by pottery, then lit up. In that spring of 1984, did the lamp regard me with trepidation as it emerged from its nest of shredded newspapers, the dragonfly seeming to quiver towards the light away from my eager, greedy hands? Having spent nearly half a century in the dark, it was oh so ready for its close-up, spotlit in gleaming splendor on a pedestal in front of admiring museum-goers. So relieved that it had escaped that one fragile moment of belonging to me.